Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're joined in studio by the O'Toole family. Billy, how are you doing, Billy?
I'm good, Ray. Thank you.
Nikki, you're welcome.
Hello, how are you?
And Nisha, age 1, on the floor. So you have a great story to tell. You have a great story to tell, Billy.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy, but it's a good story.
Yeah, yeah. You've been through the ringer, haven't you?
A little bit. Some would say that. I wouldn't look at it like that sometimes, Ray.
Yeah, you're out the other
I'm
side.
I'm here now.
Yeah, you're here. Oh! Hey, Nisha. Nisha. I just put something on my leg. Here, come on, Nisha. Come on.
She's flirting already.
That's how you're watching her.
Yes. Well,
Mind your head. There you go. Good girl. That's it now. You want to come up to me? Now, here we go. Now, there's Nammy and Daddy, look. Now, how's that? So Nisha's on my knee now. That's for the moment anyway. We'll see how it goes. So you're 37.
Billy. 37, 38 next month.
Right, okay. So I suppose let's start at the beginning. You're the youngest of six.
Yes, I'm the youngest of six O'Tooles, should I say.
Right.
And they were O'Tooles. Unfortunately, we lost one brother back in 1966 to cystic fibrosis.
Before you were born?
Before I was born. But the other five are alive and healthy.
Right. So I suppose as a result of losing that brother, your parents knew that it was in the genes.
Yes. So cystic fibrosis, you have to have the genetic, basically, you have to have the CF gene to have a child with CF.
Right.
A 1 in 4 chance.
Aha. So was he the firstborn?
He was the firstborn. He was born in 1966.
Right.
So the year that England won the World Cup.
And what age was he then when he died?
He was about 12 months.
Right.
12 months. He wasn't, okay. Didn't make it out of the hospital, unfortunately.
And did you chat to your parents then about knowing that there was a 1 in 4 chance going ahead? No, not really.
No, it was kind of, our CF and our family was a bit, we didn't talk about it. We treated everybody the same.
Yeah.
Nobody was sick per se, you know. And I suppose, nobody ever thought of CF as that chronic illness that it's known as.
Yeah. I suppose that was great for you as a child because it's not, you were sort of in denial a bit. You did everything that all your mates did.
100%, yeah. And then I suppose as time went on, I kind of seen myself and I was lagging behind my friends. As my friends were growing older, they were getting bigger, they were getting stronger. I was running around the field and I could feel myself falling back a bit more. So then I kind of knew things were a little different from everybody else.
But I suppose up until 12, 13, you were able to match your friends.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd say different, but
yeah.
I definitely was, yeah.
Yeah. So then teenage years, and this is, it happens with a lot of people who have an illness, that they've been accepted and they've managed up until then. And then I suppose the gap opens up.
Yeah.
And you can't do all the things that your mates can do.
Yeah, it was a funny one because I suppose anybody would ask me about CF. Now we're talking about 25, 26 years ago.
Yeah.
CF wasn't what it's known for now. You know, everybody knows about CF now. Well, I'd hope with all the campaigning that we've done.
Yeah.
It was kind of, what's wrong? You know, even in school one day, somebody said to me, I heard you're anorexic, you're in hospital. And you're kind of like, how do you explain that it's cystic fibrosis?
Yeah. And you didn't want to be known as the sick child either?
No, I was too brave and too...
No, you go to your mum. There you go.
I was too, I suppose, not concerned is the wrong word. I was too, I want to be a lad. I want to be one of the lads.
Yes,
I don't want to be known as the person that was going to be sick the rest of their lives.
And to use that word again, so defiantly then, your late teens, you were doing what lads do in their late teens.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was maybe my downturn, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
But I suppose it brought you to a point where you had to have a reality check.
Yeah, I've had a few since.
but your consultant in Bowman sat you down.
Yeah, when I was 18, I suppose I was in and out of hospital a lot more, and I was in Castlebar General. Dr. O'Neill, who does phenomenal work down there, said, I can look after you to a certain point, but now you've kind of got to the adult side of CF. So I went to see Professor McIlvany, and basically he did a full NCT on my lungs, liver, kidneys, pancreas, everything that affects cystic fibrosis, he did. And he came back with the results, and I had osteoporosis, I had liver disease, my lungs were failing.
Right.
And he basically said, you know, you've got a few years left. And it was like this, sitting across the table.
A few years left and you were 18.
Yeah. He says, it was like this, sitting across the table from him. And he was kind of breaking this news, and I was like, okay, I got serious issues here. And that was kind of the reality check. Well, CF has now taken over my life. Mm. Before that, I was like, you know, that'll be grand. Same as Irish. Everybody Irish would say, that's grand. Not going to worry about it.
But although you were getting more sick, you were still functioning.
Oh, 100% functioning, yeah. At that time. Yeah. Yeah. I was still going to discos, parties, staying out till 3 or 4 in the morning, doing what every other 18, 19 year old would be doing, but at a different level. You know, I knew I was sick, didn't worry about it, but knew in the back of my head that, God, I've only 3 or 4 years left.
Right.
So it was kind of party mode, but I'm going to die.
So eventually you had to have a double lung transplant.
Yeah.
That's major, major, isn't it?
You see, Ray, you'd say it's major. Everybody else would say it's major. But when you get to a stage and you're 3 weeks in and out of hospital, so 3 weeks in, 2 weeks out, weeks in, 2 weeks out, you get to that mindset where you're like, I've no choice. You know, it's either live or die. So yeah. I went to Ken Egan, who's basically one of the biggest doctors in Ireland for transplants. And his brother, Jim Egan, his brother Ken, was my local GP. So he said no the first time. He said, no, you're too well. We don't, because it's a double-edged sword. Transplant is a double-edged sword, like most people know. You're not sick enough to get the transplant. In my head, I was like, this is crap. I am sick. You know, I'm dying.
And then you can be too sick to get the transplant because it's major surgery.
Double-edged sword, So you have to be at the right level.
Yeah.
He said no the first time, said no the second time. And then in June 2010, I was on the list, and I was sent to Newcastle at the time. And I did a week of basically every test that can be possible. You need to be sick enough, you need to be physically well to take the transplant, and you need to be mentally well to cope with the afters of the transplant.
And then do you sit and wait? Where did they get the lungs from?
At that time, now it's changed now, the Mater look after everybody in Ireland, lungs, kidneys, liver, whatever you need. But at that time, the Mater and the Freeman Hospital in Newcastle had an agreement, whereas you can wait in either. And basically, the Freeman had more, back in 2010,
of course,
they had more
bigger
experience.
Population, but they have a bigger population to draw from
as well. Yes, so I got the transplant from Newcastle.
Okay.
Unfortunately, somebody had to die
of
for
course,
that.
Yeah.
And the night I got the phone call, I was due to go into the hospital on the Friday. I went in. That Friday evening, I got a phone call from Castlebar General, who basically said to me, the consultant wants you back in straight away. And now I'd planned to go out that weekend. I was like, no, I'm not going in. I'm going out. Very stubborn in my head. On the Saturday night, I got a phone call to say that there's a pair of lungs in Newcastle. The poor guy that died had a brain tumour.
Right.
Went on the operating table for a normal routine operation and sadly passed away.
Right.
And the reason they told me that was because I had a 1% chance of catching cancer from
the lungs,
the recipient,
right,
or the donor, basically.
Yeah. Amazing. Changed your life.
It really did. It made huge differences.
Now, Nikki, how are you?
Hey, hello.
I suppose people know the end of the story because we've met Nisha.
Yes.
They do that a lot in books now. They give you the final, you know, final pages at the start just to get your interest, pique your interest. So one of the things that I didn't know, and I've been speaking to CF people a long time and various people who've recipients of organs, is that if you're male and you have CF, give us the statistic on fertility.
It's very high. 2% fertility, you have 2% chance of being fertile.
2%?
2%. Now, they say 97 to 98% infertile, so 2 to 3%, should I say.
Now, I didn't. I think our listeners will go, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a less known fact. So the deferens that releases the sperm is blocked up by mucus.
Right.
So basically, the mucus does not release.
Aha. So it's not that you don't have sperm. It's just that the plumbing is blocked.
Yes. Basically, yes.
Right.
The sperm is there, but it doesn't get out. It's locked in jail.
Pretty basic, isn't it? It's pretty basic.
Pretty basic, but not known.
Yeah. And on top of everything else, you have to...
Well, you've other
go through. Yeah. Okay. Right. So we've established that. Now let's go back to Tinder.
Great app. It's a great app.
We only recommend that
and
now.
A few more. Let's not differentiate between which app.
So you were swiping, and when did this happen, Nikki?
Well, he actually didn't swipe me.
It's true.
Right.
That's very true.
His friend took his phone and did it for him.
Aha.
So he wouldn't even pick me.
What's your friend's name?
Emma O'Donoghue.
All right. So Emma spotted you
on Tinder. Emma spotted me and... Here we are.
Yeah. No, come on. Now we need a little bit more details. So the first day, was there to and fro on text? Is that the way it works? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of that.
And then you decided, Nikki, that maybe I'd like to meet this guy.
No, I am always for meeting quickly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I am not for long chat. And also he thought that my grammar is not like the best. So he's like, well, I don't know about that one. Like, she can't even spell. I'm like, I'm not Irish.
Yes.
He was like,
come on, Billy.
Oh, my fault.
English isn't her first
all
language.
All I see was photos.
Well, he said, well, you look ginger to me, so.
So where was the first date?
In a doll bar in Galway.
Right.
Yeah.
Who arrived first?
Me.
Right. So you were sitting up at the bar, like, first dates.
Went by pink jumper. She'll never forget that.
First date, pink jumper. I'm like, oh, God.
Well, Lucas, I had dinner beforehand and I dropped food on my other jumper, so I had to go and get a picture.
Right.
That should have more.
Now we're getting the detail. I like this detail.
That should have definitely warned me because he does that all the time, dropping food on
his
I'm a bit of a mess, but anyways.
So you're looking at the door on your watch, are you?
I was looking at the door thinking, oh, this, very pretty woman is going to come through the door. And a very pretty woman did come through the door, but she was bouncing like a kangaroo. The happiest person I've ever seen in my life. Just a huge smile.
Yeah.
And little did I know, she was a bit hungover.
I was, yeah. A little bit.
But it went well.
Two points in and I was cured. No, it went very well.
It went very well, yeah.
And you were, a lot of people suggest this, that you lay your cards on the table. So you most of them, you said you had cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, I don't hold back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in my life, so, I know some people would be like, oh God, I don't want to tell my full story, but I was there laying it all out on the table. I have CF and many more flaws, but I didn't mention them.
you did loads, though.
And did you know what cystic fibrosis was, Nikki?
No idea. I literally had to Google it then after. Had no idea.
Okay.
Like, obviously, I got a little bit what Billy was saying, it's serious, but you don't think it's that serious if you never heard of it, before.
And this guy's sitting in front of you with a pint and he's making you laugh.
And he made me laugh and that's something,
Yeah.
So I was just happy out and then he's there oh, I nearly died. I was like, sure you did,
A few times.
Yeah.
So second date. Did you know at this stage that there was sort of 98% chance that you were infertile?
I knew.
You knew? Okay.
Yeah, I knew.
Share it with Nikki?
No. I think that was enough for her on the first day.
You don't overwhelm.
Chronic illness, you kind of don't want to go above and aboard.
Yeah.
So, I didn't share that.
So when did that conversation happen?
Well,
it happened when we kind of decided we would like to have a baby together. And Billy was like, oh, yeah, sure, let's try. And 2 months in, and I asked, listen, can you actually have? And he was like, you know what? I'm not sure, but I don't think so. I'm like, what? You didn't tell me that. And he was like, I didn't know how. He just didn't know how to say it.
Yeah.
So we just had the conversation then after, when I actually brought it up.
How do you think you would have reacted if he told you on that first night?
Oh, sure, I know myself. I would probably have to Google it anyway. So there would be no difference. And I do take life as it is. So I would say, okay.
Okay, yeah.
That's just the way it is, so.
So there's a workaround, obviously, or Nisha
there
wouldn't
is.
Be here.
Yeah, IVF. And I think a lot of men don't talk about IVF enough. I think it's one of those things that where guys think, God, I'm not... I'm not strong enough to have IVF. Me, I knew it would have to come at some stage in my life. Now, I didn't know before Beaumont. I didn't know before the transplant. I didn't know after brain hemorrhages, whatever else that happened to me in my life. So when I went looking for IVF, I was like, where do I go? CF Ireland were the first place I rang. I rang a team member of an advocate, could you say, which my mother did 60 odd years ago. And he basically had two kids And he explained everything to me. And then I was like, okay, this is not too bad until the surgery, basically. Yes. And then
so they have to surgically remove the sperm.
Yes.
So it's happy away there. So it's down there.
It's down there, yeah. Yeah. But it's just not just coming out.
Yeah.
It's shy. Yeah. In some way. And yeah, we had the general aesthetic and the sperm was removed. And it's stored in Galway and part of it is on the floor. Yeah. Crawling around.
Yeah. And then IVF and CF Ireland helped you with that?
Yes, so they helped basically financially. They provide a service financially. Before now, the National IVF Centre have taken over this now, and they provide the first round of fertility, could you say. So we went through the first round, basically didn't happen for us. Second round it did, we had Nisha. But what now it's happening is the National Fertility gives you the first round, but they don't provide yes,
that's
a second right.
That's,
round.
Yeah, that's only recently.
Yes,
isn't it?
That's only arrived recently. So yeah. CF Ireland are helping people. Obviously, we're thinking, you know, Nisha needs a brother or sister. Yes. Obviously, I'm from a large family. Nikki has a brother. It's kind of a thing in our heads. Yeah. So CF Ireland, you know, we'll go looking from CF Ireland because we can't get it from the National, which hopefully will change in your
There's school. More to it than the financial support. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's the advocacy, as you say, and the fact that you're talking to somebody who's been through the whole thing.
Mm, it's somebody to talk to. Now, thankfully, CF has changed a lot in the last few years.
It?
So now we're looking at kids. We have grandmothers. You know, we're looking at a huge, bigger picture in CF now. So this is only the start of it, kids.
Because I know this is sort of stark, but I remember when I first started hearing about CF, that Ireland had the lowest life expectancy in Europe for CF patients, and that was 29, at the age of 29.
Yeah. When I was born in 87, it wasn't even that.
Right.
You know, it was 7 or 8, and we have the highest instance of CF per capita in the world, not just in Europe, in the whole wide world. So we'd have about 1,200 patients. 2 years ago, the median age of survival was 36, 37. Now, that's rising all the time. With CAF Trio, that's after coming on board, it's changing people's lives massively. So we're in a different era of CF.
Yeah.
You know, and we're thinking of, God, mortgages, we're thinking of babies.
Yeah, that's the thing, mortgages now.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah, yeah. So if basically mortgages are a huge kind of issue for anybody with CF now. So CF was known, as you just said there, 20 years ago, the median age was about 7 or 8. Now, when people hear about CF, that's a chronic illness. You know, how are you going to pay off a mortgage? Yes. They don't look at the statistics now. And I suppose the statistics are what they are, but it's not dealt with on an individual basis. I'm not looking at dying today or tomorrow. I'm 38 years of age. I'm looking for a mortgage, but they see cystic fibrosis. They look into your medical history. Any bank.
And what do
Ireland,
CF Ireland say to you when you raise
CF Ireland, they're basically fighting this cause. Okay. CF Ireland's point here is we're moving further into independent living. We're not in this group.
And what about the government? Have they done anything for you?
Government, no, not really. You know, it's banks. I mean, the banks won't look at CF any other way than it's a risk.
Right.
But they're not looking at the individual. So, you know, you apply to a bank, the CCF Ireland, you're not going to pay a mortgage back in 20 years. You mightn't be here. Simple as. I can get insurance on a year-on-year basis, but I can't get insurance on a 20-year basis.
Anisha, what a joy.
I know, she's fun. She is fun.
Good baby,
she,
huh?
Like I, that's the first time I remember. She crawled under the desk, and there she was, pulling at my jeans. That's one of the best things that's ever happened to me on air. Honestly.
She's nosy like her mother.
Yeah. So she celebrated her first birthday when?
This Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday.
Yeah,
all right.
Last Saturday.
Happy birthday, Nisha. Happy birthday, Nisha. And it's 65 Roses Day this weekend, isn't it?
Yes, on Friday.
On Friday.
12th.
And 65roses.ie, or you can buy the Purple Rose in Dunn's and other participating outlets. And all of the money raised will go towards services like you've availed of over the years.
And I mean, there's only transplants, fertility, but we also have so many more. Exercise grants, bereavement grant, social and distress grant. There's so many.
You look very healthy.
Do you feel healthy? Yeah. I feel healthy and happy.
Yeah. Nikki, you look very healthy as well.
Thank you.
And Nisha is the picture of health.
Well, yeah, she's there with you, I'd say.
Nisha, where are you, Nisha? Okay. Oh, there you are. Come here. You have to go to a commercial break. I'll go and get Nisha. Billy, thanks, Nikki. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. There she's there.